Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is the Hagman Report for today. It is Tuesday, the 18th day of January 2022, and I welcome everyone to today's program. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in us. Thanks for joining me today on this very snowy, very cold in the Northeast day. Klaus Schwab, Fauci, they partner with the Chinese Communist Party dictator to bring down the Western world. And of course, this appeared at the this took place at the World Economic Forum. I'm going to be getting into that a little bit. You know, look, folks, what we're going through right now is a takeover by the globalists. And I just want to reiterate this to drive this point home. The setup of the Western world, specifically the United States, with respect to the Medicare, Medicaid programs, the just the grift and graft that's out there. It's really unsustainable. The open southern border, the dilution of Western culture by illegals coming in, the crime, the Soros-placed district attorneys, Open Society Foundation, along with Facebook, you know, Chan and Zuckerberg and others, propping up various school districts to take over our children. All of this, they've been waging war against us now for quite some time. They, meaning the globalist people who think that they're going to run the world, rule the world, and we are going to either be dead or serve them. That's really the bottom line here. And they're not hiding these facts. They're not at all. So here's my question: is when you look at things like the questioning of Fauci, who, by the way, 54 to 59% of Americans have lost faith in Fauci. Now that's got to really hurt this egomaniac. I believe it does. But when you look at things like this, and you look at Fauci under the microscope, and you look at his history, and you look at the history of the NIAID, the NIH under Collins and the predecessors there, and you see what's happened. You see what happened really from go back to 76 to the present. You can see how everybody is kind of working together, maybe on their own separate paths, their own separate lanes, but they're working together to take down Western civilization. The coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2, which was manufactured in a laboratory in China, funded by Fauci, Daszak, and others for gain-of-function research, this artificial virus, bioweapon, is merely the tool, the gun, the weapon against us. It's one of many, but it's an effective one because fear comes with that. It's interesting too how the fear gets, how fear is played and fear is used. If you go back a little ways, go back to 2009. I'm going to read a quote from Dr. Damien Downing, then the president of the British Society of Ecological Medicine. This appeared in Al Jazeera, but here's the quote. And think about this, compare it to today. Governments, they do like epidemics, just the same way they like war, really. It's a chance to impose their will on us and get us all scared so that we huddle together and do what we're told. Pretty profound, I would say. Now, let me back out of this just for a second and address a couple of other things here. as we see our government, the bodies of certain committees and such, illegal or not, as we see them investigating the 1-6 dust up, right? This huge insurrection about 1-6, January 6th, of course. They're starting to come unglued. The narratives are starting to come unglued because citizens, and I give a lot of credit to certain citizens that go out there and start asking questions, to encounter people who were once on the FBI's most wanted list that aren't there anymore. For example, Ray Epps. And there's others as well. And you can find these videos online, but you can see the heat is being turned up. As the heat is being turned up against the people who are coming after us, they are actually doubling down. This is important to understand because as we, as a people, as you do your job, you're listening and watching this show. That's, hey, thank you. Thank you. As the word gets out about what's really going on, the people who are behind all of this madness are doubling down. Now, you may think, well, geez, we don't want them to double down. We don't want to make things worse. The alternative is even worse than that. If we acquiesce and subjugate ourselves to their madness, then we will die quicker. We will be imprisoned quicker and with less resistance. We have to put up the resistance. And this is so important to really discuss because when you look at, and all you have to do is look at certain high profile situations. You look at the people who have been incarcerated, not charged yet, some charged, minor charges, but kept incarcerated in the DC jail because of January 6th. Those are true political prisoners. If you look at the way the January 6th committee has come after Steve Bannon, for example, Roger Stone, for example, and I know that there's no love lost between Roger Stone and Steve Bannon. I get that. Look, you don't have to be friends to be common targets, right? And Alex Jones and others yet to be named. Believe me, there will be others. And the others will be equally disturbing, I can guarantee you. So now pushing back into what happened in late 2019 with this lab leak or this lab release of a bioweapon in communist China that really was created or at least funded here in the United States by the very people who the left and the globalists hold up as these saviors. Well, this is starting to come unglued. I remember the Epoch Times. They had this infographic, a great infographic. And one part of the infographic, I mean, they laid this out just fabulous, but one part specifically dealt with this cover-up. February 1st of 2020, this telephone conversation that involved Fauci and Collins. All right. Now, the transcript, parts of the transcripts were released, and I know that the Epoch Times did a great job on this, but that should tell us, going back to 2020, 2 years ago almost, think about this, almost 2 years ago. And this mope, Fauci, and the mope, Collins, they haven't been held to account. Nor is Peter Daszak and others. Xi Zhengli, the bat lady. Nobody is being held to account. They're still walking around sucking air free as a bird. Reminds me of that newspaper that came out on 9/11. Bill Ayers, you know, standing on top of an American flag. Head of the weather, part of the infrastructure of the weather underground. These people have been with us throughout modern times. And these people are still involved in taking this country down. But I want to get to a couple of things here that really, of late, that heat's being turned up now. And I've got to tell you, as the heat gets turned up, they don't like this. Fauci especially doesn't like this. He doesn't like to be questioned because his word, he is science, don't forget. And probably your PCP is science too. Don't you dare question your PCP, your doctor. See, this affects all of us, doesn't it? Or most of us. You got to have to go to a hospital for a routine procedure or maybe surgery or whatever. Oh my gosh, you know, you've got to jump through hoops. Remember the airports. Remember one guy thought it'd be a good idea to light his shoes on fire. And for 20 some years, we've been taking our shoes off. Do you think for one moment, using that as an example, the shoe bomber, Richard Reed, 20 years ago, one case, explosives in shoes. 20 plus years later, what are we doing at the airports? We're still taking off our shoes. Do you think for a moment, knowing that in, you know, 2 months, masks will be a thing of the past, vax passports will be a thing of the past? No, we're going to let it go. No. You've got their playbook. You can see. Here's what happened recently. Well, I'm going to just go a little bit further on the history of this, because go back to 1906. Back in that time period, infectious diseases caused a lot of death, a lot of suffering and death. You can find the newspapers and stuff, and you can see 800 to 1,000 people out of every 100,000. Americans died of some infectious disease. Now, you fast forward to the 70s, mid-70s, 76, for example, that number went down to about 50. So the center, or the national, NIAID and NIH, they were like, well, this isn't good. I mean, we're putting ourselves out of business. The situation at that point, you start to become, okay, I'm making $400,000 a year, right? As far, or whatever the case might have been at the time. Whenever he came to head the NIAID, I believe that was in 84, he's making so much money, and he's saying, well, wait a second. You know what? We're losing, we're becoming obsolete. So what's the normal psychotic response to that? Well, you create stuff for job security, among other things. And then at the same time, you've got people who are the psychopaths in control working and saying, you know what? We can work with this guy here and we can create things, right? And we can cause that fear to subjugate the population and the masses. And you know what? We can also, if we're really good at things, to summon Bill Gates. If we do a really good job, we can have an impact on the population, on population control. But remember the swine flu epidemic? And you remember this. If you go back to 76, Fauci, he was a frontline spectator, this according to RFK Jr.'s book, in the NIH's bogus swine flu pandemic. That year, a soldier at Fort Dix died from a lung ailment. And that followed this forced march, and he didn't do so well. And anyway, the Army doctors at that point, and this is the backstory, sent some of the tissue samples to the CDC that identified the problem of this dead soldier as swine flu. Now, there's a guy by the name of Richard Krauss at that time, I think Francis Collins, but Richard Krauss now, back then, was Fauci's boss. And he worked with others to say, wow, we're going to have a really bad pandemic. And they used that to initiate this demand for a vaccine. This is back in 76 now. Again, may I remind you. So the NIAID chief convened an in-house strategy sessions, actually, with Merck's iconic vaccine developer, Maurice Hilleman, and other industry executives and people in the know. Now, subsequent to those meetings, congressional investigators got the notes about those consultations. This is, again, I'm talking about the swine flu in 76. And they found that Dr. Hilleman candidly confessed that the vaccine that was developed as a result of this swine flu had nothing to do with science and everything to do with politics. Now see, the reason I'm mentioning this to you, again, in this context, is because these people they're like moronic burglars, okay? Moronic criminals. They don't have, many times criminals don't, what would you call it? They're not the brightest bulb in the bunch, right? But anyway, so the template was set back in the 70s. And I just wanted to point that out. So you had this thing that fell apart in the 70s, despite the best efforts of the people at NIAID and NIH to move forward with, hey, we need a vaccine. And they ultimately did the vaccine. They found out, well, it had nothing to do with science. It had everything to do with politics. Okay, now, you got that, right? Now, if you fast forward, and I'm not going to do this in the interest of time, but if you look at the HIV AIDS situation, oh, what a flippin' mess. When you start really digging into what Fauci did, especially to children during this AIDS, in air quotes, epidemic, and really what was behind all of that, it's not what you think. It is not what you think. And again, I would defer especially to RFK's book, especially about this particular aspect. The reason, again, I bring this up is because it's always the same MO. It's always the same attempt at using the same kind of weapons, the same push, the same, we have to get the population under control, whether it's the swine flu or HIV AIDS or now this coronavirus, it's the same thing. So this, the reason I'm bringing this up is because there was a last week meeting of a panel of doctors. And I don't know how many people saw this. And this, I believe, is clip two, Eric the Tech. A man asked this panel of physicians, MDs, doctors, a question, actually a series of questions. And now this is about the rolled out vaccine, which I find interesting because you can't separate the response into a vax. You can't separate that from the topic of the pandemic, if you will. But I want to play this. Now this is an extended, but very interesting and very telling answers to some questions that were asked at this particular meeting. Now, this was a luncheon, so you're going to hear some dishes clanking and stuff, and that distracted me. But listen to what is said here. And I'm kind of going out of order here, but let me do that. Let's go to the second video. And let's start playing this. There's a slight introduction at the beginning about what he's, you know, what's being asked, and then the answers. So let's roll with this for, and please pay attention to this, because there's some really good information here. And again, think back using this information to everything that's happened in the past and see how the past, they've tried something, it didn't quite work, so they refined it a little bit, tried something else, didn't quite work as well, they refined it some more, until finally now, it's, okay, it's what we're saying, it's kind of like they're almost giving up. It doesn't matter what the facts are, we're going to do this, shut up. Well, what about, why are you doing, because, shut up. And now they've got social media on their side, you ask a question, you get censored. There's no debate. Again, try to debate. Try to go into your own doctor's office, ask a question. It's, well, because shut up. Because I'm the doctor. I know better. And your research is nothing but social media, Facebook. You sit on the John, right? And you use your iPhone to do your research. That's what they want you to believe. But when you dig deep, dig down, and you find the information in the actual government documents, that's not that's good research. But let's go to clip two and watch there, listen to this and watch this. It's well worth your time. Go ahead.
So recently at the Gaylord Entertainment Center in Nashville, I had the opportunity to ask a panel of doctors, some very well-respected, well-known doctors, some questions they did not expect. It was at a lunch, and I was very interested in their responses, and I think you will be as well. Check this out.
Okay, I don't come from a medical background. I'm a former athlete, and I care about health and freedom in general, so that's why I'm here. But I just want to set up this question with a few stories recently. So we were told fetal cell lines were absolutely not in the vaccines. Then Project Veritas did their, you know, undercover in, journalism and found out it was. There was a German doctor, Andreas Novak, who was murdered last week after he reported that graphene oxide was actually in the vaccines. There was a head of a German hospital last week who jumped off the roof of his hospital after admitting COVID-19 vaccines were really about totalitarian control and it was a scam. Then we had Dr. Carrie Madej showing several batches of Moderna and Pfizer vaccines with self-assembling tentacled nanobots. I saw this video and images. I didn't know if I believed it. So then I read recently in 2019 where the NIAID, I believe it is, said, yes, we are looking at self-assembling nanobots within the vaccines. And I saw Dr. Fauci's signature on the document. So all that sets up this question. Number one, what is really in these things? Because I just don't have access to a microscope to go look at it. Number two, these are bombshell stories to me. I mean, as a regular guy, this stuff speaks to me. When you got doctors, head of hospitals, jumping off the roof. So are these censored stories useful to the public? So number one, what's in the vaccines? Number two, is this useful?
So because these injections are experimental and they're only being used under the EUA, we do not know the full list of ingredients that's in them. No one knows. We do know that there's supposed to be messenger RNA to manufacture spike protein. We found out that there's also messenger RNA in there to stop the body from stopping the body from removing the messenger RNA.
Okay, pause that. Just keep that pause for a second. All right, you heard what he said. Because of the EUA, we don't know exactly what's in the jabs. Is there any ambiguity there? But that's not what we're being told. Oh, no. I'm not going to interrupt this, but I am going to cut it short. You can go ahead and continue this. There's four doctors, three, I believe, answer. Maybe all four do in this video. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. It would be worth your time to watch it all, but let's continue.
Particles in there. We know that there's polyethylene glycol in there. What else is in there? We don't know, and no one is holding them responsible for letting us know what is in the shots. The German doctor you mentioned found that it wasn't graphene oxide that was in it. It was graphene hydroxide. and the potential for graphene hydroxide, based on his scientific understanding, was that it breaks apart in the bloodstream and causes razor blade cuts into the endothelial lining of the cells, of the blood vessels. Now, we're seeing people with increased clotting in their blood and strokes. We're seeing over 100 soccer players internationally who've already collapsed and died on the field. And he raised the suggestion that the action of the graphene hydroxide is what's causing these blood clots and these heart attacks and these strokes. So any scientific mind, when they see any scientific mind that sees a list of observations, then has to ask a question. That's what the scientific method is. Scientific method is, wow, over 100 of these soccer players have died suddenly, and many more athletes have died suddenly. And there's some concern that there might be some chemicals in this shot that are creating not only the cytokine storm that Dr. New spoke about, but blood clots and strokes and sudden death. The question that needs to be asked is there something or some things in this shot that could be contributing to the observations that we're seeing? That's a normal scientific method. And then you assess the shots by looking at what the ingredients are, looking at the chemical makeup, and trying to understand the effects of those chemicals and what they would have on the body. We do know that there's no study isolating any of the ingredients in these shots to test them for safety and biological effects in the body, short or long term. Yet, you hear they say these are safe, right? So when your observation in the real world differs from what they say, do you pay attention to what the authority tells you, or do you adhere to your observation and your experience and question further?
Okay, let's cut that off. Realize right there. Okay, folks, please, this would be well worth your time. If you haven't seen this, watch this all the way through, because a lot of concerns are addressed and asked and answered with this panel. Now, these are medical doctors, scientists, and they're talking about what you are being forced to get or have been forced to get, or at least, told to get, right? All right, I'm going to quickly move to this. Now, Senator Marshall from Kansas got into it with Anthony Fauci. This was last week now. You remember this. I'm sure you do. Specifically, this was about his financial statements. Now, if you go to, again, go to HagmanReport.com. The link will be in the program description box. And you can see, breaking, Senator Marshall proves Fauci lied by obtaining previously unpublished financial records. All right. As in all criminal cases, you follow the money, especially when there's money to be made. And you'll find out the real story. Now, in this, this is where you really have to really pay attention and drill down. Under the background section here, the fact that Senator Marshall questioned Dr. Fauci at a hearing about a number of issues, including his financial disclosures and investments. Contrary to what Dr. Fauci said, Fauci's financial disclosures for the years of COVID pandemic were not public. Therefore, Senator Marshall requested them during a hearing. Now, clearly distraught by the line of questioning that included Fauci's plummeting approval ratings, I mentioned them again, you're looking at a 54 to 59% range of approval. They're losing the narrative. If this is the face of science, the people that are in the bowels of the mansions of the groups that run this world, right, or attempting to run this world, are seeing, hey, wait a minute, we have a problem. Now, let's drill down into the link about funding gain of function research. Eric, if you can click on that, Oops. Okay. Never mind. That takes you to the Project Veritas. I'm sorry. That takes you to the Project Veritas documents, which we went over that last week. Now, this is the questioning regarding Fauci's financial disclosures. All right. This, if you scroll down to, let's see here, question number one, if you see that, all right, at the very bottom paragraph, you may click here or on the image below to watch. This is Senator Marshall really putting Fauci in a corner about his approval ratings and about his financial ties. I thought this was, although you may have seen this, this is woven into the entire picture I'm painting for you here. Let's go ahead, and if you don't mind, can you click on that? All right, go ahead and click on that and watch this exchange, and especially watch Fauci's body language. Go ahead.
As we have been watching this hearing today, contentious at times, some heated exchanges with Dr. Fauci and some of those lawmakers, including Kansas Senator Roger Marshall, really took on Dr. Fauci for the lack of trust, the eroding trust in our nation's health officials. Here's a bit of that exchange real quick.
Honestly, you've lost your reputation. The American people don't trust the words coming out of your mouth.
I believe that's a real distortion of the reality. If you look at everything that I've said on TV, it is to validate, encourage, and get people to abide by the recommendations of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Look at everything I've ever said.
Yeah, Dr. Fauci, I understand that, but perception is reality.
All right,
yeah.
And you're hurt. I want to go to quickly the actual exchange between Marshall and Fauci. This would be right above question three, the last link in the last paragraph on question two. This is about the gain of function, the NIH's role, and the origins of COVID-19. And watch Fauci's body language as he responds to this accusation. Following this, Stan Dale from standale.com is back with us. Thank goodness, because I've missed him. But watch this very quickly.
You previously told this committee under oath that NIH and NAIAD have never funded gain-of-function research with the HecoHealth Alliance. However, a report from the Department of Defense Inspector General released yesterday states that HecoHealth Alliance proposed DARPA in 2018 seeking funding to conduct gain-of-function research on bat-borne coronaviruses. This proposal, named Project DEFUSE, D-E-F-U-S-E, was rejected by DARPA because the project didn't address the current research's potential to violate the gain-of-function moratorium. The proposal does not mention or assess potential risk of gain-of-function research. That's a direct quote from the DARPA rejection letter. The same proposal rejected by DARPA for gain-of-function potential was not rejected, but by NIAID under your leadership. You funded Project DEFUSE and its research that took place at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Why did you tell the committee that your agency has never funded gain-of-function research? Why did your agency award this grant despite it being rejected by DARPA due to its concerns about violating the moratorium that was in place? And finally,
watch his hands.
Will you commit today to release all records fully unredacted by the end of this week so Congress and the American people can know the truth about NIH's role and the origins of COVID-19? Okay.
So, again, Senator, it really pains me to have to just point out to the American public how absolutely incorrect you are. What came out last night on Project Veritas was a grant that was submitted to DARPA. Then it distorted and said, we funded the grant. We have never seen that grant, and we have never funded that grant. So once again, you are completely and unequivocally incorrect. When you joined the DARPA proposal was a grant that we never saw and we did not fund. So you are incorrect.
Our social media will have all the supporting documents and we'll be supporting these to the record as well.
You're backing down on this? Why don't we go and look at the Veritas statement. They were talking about a grant that was submitted to DARPA.
Are you saying this was not? Are you saying that this was viral gain of function research?
I'm telling you that you're saying.
Are you saying that this was not viral gain of function research?
By the definition that you were very well aware.
Which your P3CO definition is just a legalese to get away to allow you to do the viral gain of function studies.
This is what I'm talking about, Senator.
Senator Marshall, if you'll please allow the witness to respond.
Senator, we know, and the misinformation, that the guide rails for what can be done or not were not established by me. They were established by a three-year process led by the Office of Science and Technology Policy of the White House.
And decided by you in a secret meeting at the White House in December of 2019.
Senator, that is incorrect. And this refers exactly to what I was talking about in response to Senator Rand Paul. You are incorrect completely, and every time I try to explain,
you're incorrect, but the facts are on my side. So why will you not commit to sharing everything open, unredacted with this Congress?
So
all right. This is a very telling series, and you can watch the third video as well. I'm not going to take any more time up on this, but I played that. I had that played to say this. You can connect the past behavior of these government agencies and the government bureaucrats to a line of criminal course of conduct through even going back to the 70s, given the fact that, you know, from the turn of the century to the mid 70s, their function, their use, their relevance, and I'm talking about NIAID and really NIH, but specifically NIAID, had lost relevance, and they picked this back up, seeing the tool that they could use, the globalists could use this as a tool, and also make Fauci and company happy by making them relevant again. And this is the method by way that they would subjugate the entire population, the Western world, and those people who believe they're free. And I say that again because now they are cornered. This is starting to come out. People are losing. They're starting to say, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. They're starting to wake up, and panic is ensuing. So anything's on the table at this point. That's why I said this. That's why I brought it out this way. And I would urge everyone to just, you know, keep your head on a swivel. Understand these people are cornered. They feel the heat, and they're going to feel more heat. Especially from we the people. All right, Stan Dale from standale.com, one of my favorite people. And I thought about him a lot over the last couple of days, especially with that volcanic eruption, Tonga, right? Anyway, in the Pacific, and of course, all of the issues there, we're seeing a lot of earth changes. Stan's the authority on earth changes and changes in earth, the sun and everywhere else. And He was under the weather. He had some medical procedures done. He was sick, and I'm glad he's back. Stan, how are you, sir?
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. How are you feeling?
Well, it's been an interesting 10 days, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's all behind me now.
You know, I wouldn't want to be you. I'm telling you, folks, I got to tell you something. Stan's, you know, I've been praying for you, Stan, because you've been put through the ringer, man. I'm telling you. You feeling better?
Yeah, pretty much. Thank goodness for painkillers, but yeah, they're easing off now and getting ready for scheduling the next round of surgery. So,
really,
yeah,
we're getting old, aren't we? You know, it's
that's the problem. Things are breaking and you know, locking up, and Polly and I are both seeing those changes, and that's just part of life.
Well, see, my wife started with surgery back in December. Then you picked it back up. Now, I'm going to have surgery, I guess, the end of this month. It's kind of tentatively scheduled for my jaw and stuff. So I'm going to be off for a little bit. So, I mean, it's a constant battle, isn't it? You know, my goodness. But, oh, well,
yeah.
We'll make it. We'll make it. As long as God wants us around. We'll
yeah. Happy. On a happier note. Tomorrow is our 24th wedding anniversary. If you look on our show images page at the very top, you'll see a nice thing there, Eric. It's not numbered. It's just the first thing at the top. Yep. If you click on the photo, you see a picture of the castle where we were married down in Australia, in Ballarat. And if you click on the text underneath that picture, you can see the whole story there and read about the wedding ceremony and, you know, the things we wore, the vows we gave, the music we played, have fun looking at it. It's an annual thing that we put up as long as we have, you know, an anniversary. And that's now.
I love it. Married in a castle. So this is kind of like a storybook romance. It really is. Folks, it's really a heartwarming story. And I appreciate you putting that up there. So happy anniversary. And they said it wouldn't last.
I don't know who said that, but anyway, yeah. No, we've been tied since the first day we met, I think. It's just been a never-ending story, very strong. And we're getting to the point now where we almost don't have to speak. We are thinking the same things and saying the same things, you know, the sentences. It's just over the last week, we've kind of gone, wow, get out of my head, you know. It's duplicating. But that's a oneness.
And my wife and I often do that. She'll look at me and she'll say, did you do? And I'll say, yeah. And, you know, so it's like, okay, you don't have to pretty much, you know.
Vocalize it.
Exactly. It's kind of, it's so reassuring. I love it. I really love it. The marriage and that connection. So I'm glad you're celebrating that as well.
Yep. Thank you, sir. There's a few things of news. Obviously, everyone is aware of the volcanic eruption at Tonga, or just off the coast of Tonga. The ash and stuff, so you can see it. If you look at slide 55, you can click on the picture and see the huge ash deposit over that island where it occurred. And then you can click on the article below to, read about it. The thing that amazed me, this is the biggest volcanic eruption we've had since Krakatoa. And, it was mighty. We're seeing other volcanoes, the smaller ones, but in Hawaii, Kilauea and things like that, they're starting to warm up again. And earthquakes are starting to appear in clusters at the Juan de Fuca plate. Actually, let's look at slide 53 on the picture of that. And that shows a current 30-day plot for Juan de Fuca, right there on the U.S. coast of the United States between Oregon and Washington. And you can see that there are a number of earthquakes there, probably measuring in 80 to 100 of them, but these are the larger ones. And you can see that they're along the Mendocino Fault, which goes from left to right, that red line, into the clusters. And there are two clusters, one onshore and one offshore. This is a very bad area to have earthquakes, especially a lot of them telling you that things are starting to fracture, waiting for the big fracture, the one that releases a lot of energy and possibly a tsunami along the northwest coast. So keep an eye on that. Go to USGS and look at that. And let's go over to 52, slide 52. We'll go to New Zealand, to the North Island of New Zealand, because that is becoming active. I looked here at, what have we got here? Let's see. Okay, last 30 days in New Zealand. All those little blue things are earthquakes. They're not humongous, but they are a lot of earthquakes along a line that the equivalent of the USGS, and I call IGNS, they call that the zipper. And that's the zipper that unzips the island and rips it apart when it starts to blow. There have been a number over the last several hundred years, of large earthquakes along that line. But you'll see at the top end of it, if you zoom in, it's a zoomable image, Eric. Just click on White Island at the top of that arrow there. See where that, yeah, don't move it, just click it. Right there, click on that. Should bring you up a big red arrow. when you move it to the right place. Now, that that red arrow points to a little island called White Island, and it's a volcanic island, and it's been active recently. But you see all the earthquakes around it, they're kind of some of the bigger ones. That is the beginning of what the IGNS calls the Zipper fault line. And it goes all the way down to Ruapehu and right along Lake Taupo. Lake Taupo, we're reasonably certain, due to visions myself and others have had, is going to erupt violently sometime in the near future, the next 7 years, maybe less. And it's going to take out most of North Island. So we're seeing these things start to become prevalent all over the planet. Earthquakes along with suspicious zones, which could produce a lot of havoc, and volcanoes, which are mighty. And we're going to see more of that. More volcanic activity, more severe volcanic activity. And I think we'll see more submerged volcanism as well. So that's the time we're in. Now, I think that this is also tied, as many others do, to behavior in the sun. This last 5 years, you know, the greatest activity we've seen in the last 5 years on the sun is occurring now. It's about five times normal for this time of year, or the solar cycle anyway. Go down to slide 37, guys, and click on the picture. And you'll see in the picture, it's sunspot counts predicted versus actual. And versus actual. And you'll see that the little red line predicts maybe, you know, 40 sunspot number, right? But it's actually the actual one in the black and blue line up there to December of last year, you know, just a few weeks ago, was like about 80. So it's nearly double what it should be for this time of the predicted solar cycle. So the ability to predict it is in question. You know, how are they predicting it? And if you click on the article, the text beneath that, it'll show you the discussion on it. Actual sunspot counts have now exceeded predictions for 15 straight months. The monthly value at the end of December 2021 was more than twice the forecast and the highest in more than 5 years. So the sun is becoming very active, and abnormally so in this part of its cycle. I didn't put up the magnetic shots of the sun field at the moment. They're pretty, you know, self-explanatory if you go to sdo.gov, but the Solar Dynamics Observatory. But if you look at slide 38 at the picture, this shows you as much as we can with the working satellites going around the sun. And we're at zero on that. It's the heliographic thing, you know, at zero in the middle. That this shows the sun and current activity, and it goes from left to right because that's how the sun is turning in this image. We're at zero, which is, you know, when it's directed at Earth, and the equator is at zero latitude. There, you'll see it right in the middle. There's nothing there but just, you know, light green and dark green. When you see these bright white spots in the upper left and the lower left, they are in equatorial regions that are not exactly right at the equator. They're just slightly above and below it. So any of the things that produce a coronal mass ejection or thing like that, any of those things are going to probably be a glancing blow to the Earth, not a direct halo, but it could be. Now, we're seeing in the next 2 or 3 days, the top white group, they're going to be coming around facing Earth. And with the activity we're seeing, it could be an interesting couple of days when it does that. And then a couple of days following the coronal mass ejections and possible EMPs, huge EMPs, possibly. And the lower left, that one is going to be about 6 days out, and it'll be Earth-facing right in the middle. Over on the right side of the graph, you'll see two other light spots, which are activities on the sun, active regions. Those are going to be about 3 weeks before they come around and present themselves again. But they're bright and getting larger. This tells us that the sun is very active. And I think that ties to, you know, the changes in earthquakes, tectonic plate pressures, volcanoes. All of this seems to be tied together. So I think we're going to be seeing some interesting geophysical weather here very shortly. and also it'd be a good time for your EMP shield.
Absolutely. EMPshield.com, promo code Hagman. Folks, you got to get one. I'm telling you, or two or five or whatever. But you got to get them because, you know, when, I mean, if we all do this, it's going to be a lot less severe when the time comes. It's not if, but when. Let me ask you this question. So you've got that, the white flare marking on the sun. You know where it is geographically based on the graph. You know where the Earth, how the Earth rotates. You know how the sun operates. So is there a way to tell based on the graph and where we are today and the six-day time period or whatever it might be, where that would hit? Can you calculate that, or is that something that can't be calculated?
Well, because you don't know exactly when it's going to release, what latitude, no, I can't tell where exactly. Okay. No one can. But when it occurs, then we have about a two-day window, depending upon how fast the coronal mass ejections and flares, you know, throw stuff out at us, about 2 days before it reaches us and hits our magnetic field. If we have another crack, an opening in our Earth's magnetic field like we've had in the last week or so, then these solar particles at high speed can dive right down into our electric system, you know, our ionosphere, and produce a lot of problems with our radio transmissions and propagation, things like that. Those we expect, you know, they do occur, and there are warnings put out to ham radio operators about which bandwidths are going to be, you know, lousy to communicate in. So that's one thing. But when these things occur closer to the equator of the sun, closer to that 0 point latitude, then we start to be concerned because those are what's called halo, or a perfect like donut heading for us, like a halo. And that's going to be a complete hit of our environmental systems, you know, electricity in the upper atmosphere, magnetic field, everything. It won't be a glancing blow. So we'll probably have to progress a few months or another year or so into the solar cycle before we see the potential for really heavy equatorial discharges from the sun. If things go as they have before, and that kind of science is kind of, okay, usually good. It's called post hoc ergo propter hoc, as it has been in the past, so will be again. But as you can see from NASA's forecast, based on that kind of logic, we're way above already the predicted curve for sunspot activity. Something is wrong with the sun in this cycle. I'm telling you that now. I've been telling you to look for it. And I've been warning you for the last 2 or 3 years that this cycle is going to be an interesting one. It follows a pattern, the sunspot activity, et cetera, as long as it follows the norm. But when you have an exceptional thing, that's the one that surprises everybody. So you got to expect that. In slide 39, guys, if you look at that picture, it shows 16th of July, which was 2 days ago, the UV index, ultraviolet index for the United States. And where those purple are extremes, above 11, that's where you don't want to be out in the sun more than 15 minutes without, you know, some kind of sunblock, and even then with sunblock. Now, I tried by usual places to get the current UV index for the day and then the next 2 or 3 days, you know, the forecast, all government sites. None of them were showing current stuff except for this one here. And, you know, I looking at global ones, it was even harder to find a global, like, generalized map of it. But we know around the equator, it's where the ultraviolet index is very high, you know, whenever. I'm wondering why it is so difficult, why they're not updating these daily UV counts. Are they suspecting or seeing a higher UV count from the sun and they don't want to cause, you know, any worry? You know, or is it just, you know, a circumstance with the website and the management of it and the release of the data? We know that since 1992 that there have been two more bands of ultraviolet coming out of the sun. As I've said many times, these new frequencies of emissions from the sun are telling you there's a change in the nuclear reaction in the sun. The nuclear chemistry is changing. Now, why? It's already chewed up about three quarters of the hydrogen, which fuels the fusion at the moment. And at some point, we're going to switch over from hydrogen fusion to helium fusion type reactions, which will put out a different color of sun, and it will put out, you know, different amounts of heat, et cetera, et cetera. These things all added together tell us that keep an eye on the sun and go to, there are a number of places, but I use the Solar Dynamics Observatory that NASA has, and it shows me in different wavelengths what's happening on the sun. And I encourage you to look at that daily. Don't wait on me for the weekly updates and things like that. If there is an urgency, we'll put it on our main website, stanleo.com. But things are strange, and I don't have to tell you this. Our weather over the last 3 years, our climate for the whole planet has been rearranged. And this year, it's more obvious than in the past years. What do you think about your snow and levels over there, Doug? Are they normal?
Well, normal. I don't know what normal is anymore. We had very light snowfall for this season. And then yesterday, I think it was yesterday or within the last 36 hours, we got like 18 inches. All right. So, I mean, you know, it was relatively quiet, nice. And then bang, you know, all of a sudden we get hammered.
So, yeah, New York has been too.
You know, I, again, what's normal anymore? And, you know, I suppose if you wait a week, we might see 40s, you know, the temperatures in the 40s. I don't know.
It's very erratic, isn't it? Over here, it's up and down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're in a drought. And, you know, when people talk about snow, I remember what snow is, but I've not seen it for a long time.
I could take a photograph and send it to you. Actually, I did. You know, lady doesn't really care for it because, you know, when it's over her head, she's got some issues to get through that. Anyway, yeah, it's something. It's different. The climate is different. But you know, I mean, I remember back in the, 76, 77, I believe it was, the blizzard of 77 when, I mean, the snow was horrendous, and it was for like a couple of weeks. And then, you know, I remember Christmas Eve, I think it was 80 or 81, and it was 50 degrees out, 55 degrees out. So, you know, it's been like this for a while, but what do I know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we're going to see more extremes in weather, like you're talking about, you know, where it should be like a normal winter or summer or whatever. You're going to see cooling and heating, you know, extremes just suddenly as the sun starts to heat us up over our normal global temperature. We're already at 1.5 degrees centigrade above norm for the planet. When we hit 2 degrees, it's the equivalent of making an ice age or a heat wave, a real heat wave.
But see, it's not man, it's not cows, it's pretty much the sun, right? I mean, that's what you're saying. Yeah. So, you know, to think that we can work our way out of this as humans, it's pretty, there's a lot of hubris there. And I think it's an overstatement. It's just a method of control. But go ahead, sir.
Well, you know, look, I wonder sometimes if I were in charge of disseminating this information, would I give it an excuse that it's something that we can change in our behavior on the planet so that people don't utterly panic and we have anarchy? Because if it's something that you can have no control over and it's about to cause the planet to fry, you know, the weather to go crazy and whatever, and people lose jobs and food gets scarce and water is scarce, do you just come out and say, oh, well, look, here is the problem. We can't do anything about it. So, you know, good luck, bend over and kiss it goodbye. You know, you wouldn't do that. You would probably try to soft pedal it, and in a manner to get people to prepare themselves, those that are thinking and able to do so, to endure some of these horrific climate changes that are coming. You know, if a new ice age is going to hit some part of the planet, the North, South Pole are drifting, and it's, you know, rapidly. They may send her over, say, Arizona, and suddenly Arizona is not a hot state, but one, you have to deal with blizzards and sub-zero temperatures. So people that are able to do so and aware of it will probably be putting in, you know, parkas wherever they think the new North Pole is going to be. And I don't know where it's going to be. I don't know where it's going to be, over Arizona or what, but things are rapidly changing. So be prepared and understand that I'm not defending the government. But I'm saying if I were in charge, I would probably invent some kind of a lie to soften the blow and keep the population of the planet from going into anarchy. Wow. It's going to happen anyway. But
well, interesting way to think about it. I think that, you know, I'm the kind of guy that tell me like it is. Don't say sit down. I hate it when people, yeah, I don't understand. I hate when people say, I got some bad news for you. Okay. Now, first of all, don't ever say that to me. Just tell me what the bad news is. And then they say, sit down. I don't want to sit down. Tell me what the friggin' bad news is. Okay. So I'm the kind of guy that says, just tell me. We'll deal with it. Tell me what it is. I don't know.
Look, I agree with you, Doug. I agree with you. I'm that way too. But you and I are rational, logical people at the moment. We're not starving. We're not, you know, dying of thirst. And so we can think logically and clearly. But you know, as well as I do from history, that when the 90% of the people that don't know what's happening get fed bad news all of a sudden, you know, like that, the law and order breaks down. It's anarchy. And then you have no way to keep testing and reporting. I mean, darned if you do, darned if you don't.
No, and you know, I get it. I get it because, I mean, the human psyche, I think, is fragile enough now. And, of course, it's, I understand. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. So, okay. I got you.
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
Another thing of interest, whether it be from a volcano like in Tonga in slide 56, in the text, I say Tonga could spend days or even weeks cut off from the rest of the world because of difficulties in repairing its sole undersea communications cable. It's a fiber optic cable. The challenge underlines the vulnerability of undersea fiber optic cables, which have become the backbone of global communications, thanks to a capacity to carry about 200 times that of satellites. Now, okay, what if China or Russia or some other player in the world game cuts our oceanic cables to the United States, you know, our backbone to Europe and the rest of the world? Suddenly we're cut off and our internet doesn't work. And you need a submarine and special equipment to go down and repair cables if no one is guarding the break in the cable to keep you away from doing that. So we're very, very vulnerable to a lot of things, even, you know, not man-made issues like this shows us.
That's
hopefully we don't. Yeah, I don't know whether the other cables are going close to volcanoes or stuff like that, but it just underlines our dependence on these fiber optic cables.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
On a kind of sort of happier note, practical note, slide 49, Eric, it shows a picture of red and blue lasers shooting up into the sky. And it's a very clever solution to a problem in Saudi Arabia and countries that have a lot of desert and people living in the desert. It shows where a water well is that you can draw water from. And so this beacon shines up in the sky, this laser, so that people for hundreds of miles around, you know, can see where the water, nearest water is. And they start heading in that direction. Now, last July, it didn't help the guy that died at one of these wells. He was he searched for 3 days trying to find the well. When he finally found it, he was only a few meters from it. And he was in a praying position, you know, to Allah or whatever. But he died right there. He was about 40 years old, had a family, a wife and kids. And he was out looking for water. And at night, you know, traveling at night when it was cooler. But he could not find the water well in time. But with these beacons like this being put across the desert at the serviceable water wells, people can see and go after water, a very precious, somewhat commodity in Saudi Arabia. I'm not saying Saudi Arabia is, you know, great because of this, but I'm saying that, you know, this particular idea, this concept is very good, very clever, should be adopted elsewhere. Anyway, that's that on that.
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking, as you spoke about that, thinking, that would really suck, man. I mean, you know,
you're that there. Close.
I'm going to put one in your backyard, Doug.
Yeah, because, you know, it hurts to turn around to see my address and my underwear and stuff. You put a layup like that, I can find my way home. Appreciate that.
Some goings on over in the royal family in Saudi Arabia. Now, I've been, you know, watching Prince Mohammed bin Salman because he's technically in charge of the Saudi government, de facto king, but not really. He's a prince still, as long as his dad's alive. Now, his dad's close to passing. The kind of underground intelligence is saying that Mohammed bin Salman may be taken out of office by the other princes that could take the position. They may fire him, in essence. Now, I don't know whether he will allow that to happen because he's been removing various competitors to his taking over the throne there. One of them, his closest relative, he has got in prison, been torturing him and whatever, so that he can't take the role. But there might be a shakeup there. Now, if the king dies and Mohammed bin Salman or whoever else takes over, it's a throne. It's a king and not a prince. So MBS might not qualify then for, the role of Antichrist signing the peace treaty between Saudi Arabia and other nations. So we're at a very critical time here. If it's going to be MBS, that's, the Antichrist, then this has to happen. The signing of the paper with Israel has to happen within this year, I would say, because King bin Salman, his father, is gravely ill, and he's had several operations. They don't expect him to live. So we've got to have that happen, the signing by the Prince of the Covenant, by MBS, if he's the one. But he may not be. A prince is not the ruler, but right next to the ruler in rank in a country. It could still be one of the others I've suggested on my Antichrist page. In fact, it's in slide 13. You can click on that and look at the qualifications I've put in there for the various potential candidates. And Mohammed bin Salman is really one of the leaders, but you've also got in Turkey, Süleyman Soylu. He is interior minister under Erdogan, and Erdogan is losing favor and with his party and stuff, and the interior minister here is gaining support, which means he might be able to be the president and rule Turkey. Now, if he's a ruler, he's not really a prince. And so then we go across all the way over to General Qasem Soleimani, who is dead. He was killed 2nd of January, 2020. Now, this might be way out, but knowing what's being done in the back room with clones and with the doubles, body doubles and whatever, is it possible that the Iranians will resurrect, in brackets, Qasem Soleimani as though he comes back from the dead? Now, the reason I ask that is if you look at slide 46. And now I put the print there because the article itself, it's, you have to subscribe to it, whatever. So I got the print of the main part of the article and put it there for you. It says, decades after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, Tehran is struggling to win over to its revolutionary cause younger generations who are critical of domestic corruption and poverty. Iran's leaders hope to re-energize pro-regime forces through the glorification of Soleimani. They're going to make him a hero, a man from a modest background lifted by the revolution to become an important military figure. Now, he could be like a prince were he to suddenly come back alive. And we knew he had several body doubles at the time. So he may have actually been killed, but a body double may be resurrected to be him. And if that were to happen, Muslims all over the planet would go, holy cow, who could be like this guy? He's a brilliant military tactician and he was supposed to be dead, but he's alive now. The support would be all through the Arabic and also other nations that are Islamic. Now, the reason that I stress Islam is this: the brand of Islam that they use in Iran is Shiite, or like they're militaristic and they take places by force. Whereas the Sunni Muslim concept, which started in Saudi Arabia, is more peaceful and more liberal. And so the Shiites may overtake all of the Islamic mosques and cultures around the planet if this were to happen. Now, I know it's a kind of a way out there thing to say, oh, look, he might rise from the dead, but it will be a deception if he does. But I just see the groundwork being laid for that in Iran in the news, to try to get the younger people in Iran to follow the concept. Should this happen, boy, social media over there will catch fire and people will just all over the world will start to say, wow, who could be like Qasem Soleimani,
Interesting anyway. Thought. And, with all of the technology that we have that we don't know we have, something like that could very well happen. It could happen in a number, with a number of different candidates. But yes, I agree. Especially with the framework that he has established, and folks, you got to kind of go back and look at the Soleimani character and the influence of the Shiite community, the Shiite venue. So yeah, that's interesting.
He had such an intelligence network.
Yep.
Several years before his death, he was able to send a personal letter to the Secretary of Defense and have it in an envelope put on his desk in the Pentagon.
Yeah.
And no one knew how it got there.
Yeah, exactly.
He could reach out and touch him, and this is spooky.
Yeah, yeah. Go figure. Which brings a lot of questions about, what's going on here in the United States, but I digress. But yeah, I remember that vividly. And yeah, how did that get there? I'd be asking some questions. I'd want to know the answer, but what do I know?
Yeah. Slide 51. In keeping with this kind of discussion on Antichrist, we know that the Jewish people right now are going to be deceived if they're not believers, messianic believers in Jesus, that they are looking for a Messiah, their Messiah, which they didn't recognize Jesus as, to arrive soon. And Rabbi Yekutel Fish, he's a mystic in Jerusalem, gave a lesson last week in which he proved through a precise mathematical equation that next year will be the final jubilee before the arrival of the Messiah. So we're within a year, year and a half, according to him, of the Jewish Messiah arriving on the planet, which will be, of course, the Antichrist at this juncture. So even the Jewish mystics and, students of the Torah and of the... the Kabbalah, the hidden meaning stuff, they are saying he's coming within 18 months or so. So it's the writing on the wall. I don't think we're going to be waiting, another 10 years for this to resolve the Middle East to come to peace. I think at this point, we're going to have to see nuclear confrontations. We're going to have to see the peace treaty signed between Israel and the many nations. This is all going to have to happen in the next few years, two, 3 years. And we aren't going to be alive, those of us who are caught up in the rapture, whenever that is. We're not going to be alive, in my opinion, and interpreting what Paul said to the Thessalonians. That we're not going to be alive to see the Antichrist revealed. We might be raptured up. We might already be in the grave. But I think that this unveiling will be when the church is not here to witness to the unbelievers, all over the world, that, look, don't believe this guy. He's an imposter. So I'm feeling the crunch of time. We are very close to all these events happening, and revealing the Antichrist, is at hand. And before that happens, whenever it is, pre-trib, mid-trib, whatever, before that happens, the church will be raptured out, I believe. So anyway, just a thought on that whole situation with the Antichrist.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. And I know people have diverse opinions, diverse analyses. To me, in my view, it doesn't matter. I mean, I certainly would like that to happen, but, but what I find interesting is just the mechanics going up to this. And a lot of people seem to be on the same page as to some bad things coming down the road here. Some really nasty stuff. And I think everyone would agree with that. So,
yeah. And I look at, as I've said before, I look at the Ottoman Empire and at the vision that Nebuchadnezzar had that Daniel translated, where he says that the last kingdom of this age of earth would be those two legs of iron, which will be the revived Roman Empire. And if you recall, there was the East and the West Roman Empire that centered around Turkey. And the West was, of course, Europe, and the East was in the Middle East, the kings from there. And that would indicate possibly the seat of the Antichrist will be in Turkey, which is why I've put that guy, Solomon Soyu, there as a potential candidate, or at least the seat of Satan there in Turkey would be where the throne would be. The Antichrist could be somewhere else and move there, I'm sure. But anyway, it all kind of balances to Daniel's interpretation of that dream.
About that, and I don't know if this is going off track or not, and if so, you don't have to answer this, but what we're seeing with these vax passes, the QR things, the stuff on your phone, I mean, this all plays into this, right? I mean,
yeah.
So, okay, it just seems like everything that's taking place is kind of pushing us toward that event horizon. So that's just my feeling on it.
No, I agree. And, you know, if you look at it from Satan's point of view, he knows that the church has read the scriptures and is looking for signs, especially that mark or the number of the beast, you know. And so in the beginning, people are not going to want to sign up for that numbering. So we had to have a way to slip it in. And this vaccine pass is a way to slip it in. And then eventually, once you've got the vaccine pass, not only will you be able to go to restaurants and, you mix and do whatever you're allowed to do, you will be able to buy and sell with a digital system that will come into play. And the threat of a collapse of the global economy this year is huge, huge. So all these things play into, you know, Satan's master plan. He's a chess player magnificent. And so what you see is what you think is obvious is probably a gambit of some sort, you know, a side issue to detract you from the main thrust of his attack on humanity. Anyway.
And I think you're right. And I think that we have a tendency to not look at the bigger picture or not think big. I mean, you got to think big in order to understand really what's coming. And I think that's a lot of people have this fixation on one issue or a number of smaller issues and not see the bigger picture as it relates. And frankly, I really believe that's how some people are getting brainwashed in this mass formation psychosis, where they're just hypnotized and they're focused on that little shiny trinket in front of them when there's a whole room of similar trinkets. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's like that. I mean, that's why I relate it to chess, because in chess, you know, you do certain things with the right hand to make your opponent think, this is where he's going with his next move to get my queen. Okay. And in the meantime, his left hand is over here setting up a move you hadn't even thought about. So a good chess player will be looking at the whole board and potential moves that the opponent is doing. And that requires a little bit of thought and attention to detail, which most people really don't want to do. They'd rather, you know, have dinner and watch a movie or, you know, whatever it is that distracts them from the reality of the world and around us.
One of these days I want to sit down and have a play game of chess with you, have a cigar and a glass of wine or something. I don't know, something cool. We got to do that one of these days.
One of these days. You know how long it's been since I played chess?
Me too.
I can remember some of the moves, you know, the knight, the queen, whatever king, but I'd have to go back and study just the moves, not the strategies, you know, that have evolved over time. But yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's been a while for me, too.
So. Yeah. Well, we'd be a good match then. A couple of cigars, a couple of glasses of port, and
that's right.
Cotton tops.
All right.
Oh, hey, I think it's slide 51. Is that right? Slide 50. No, slide 50. If you click on the picture first, this is about MBS's new city, Neo, you know, super duper city. And I want to talk about some of the things he's offering to people to move there. You're going to have an artificial moon, which will light up each night in this city. So an artificial moon, I don't know how they're going to hang it up there, but they're going to do it. They're going to have cloud seeding to create rain over the city and the surrounding areas. You have flying taxis. You're going to have robot security in the streets, robot maids in your home. And all citizens, of course, will be able to be tracked where they are so that if they get in trouble, that the government can, the Saudi government can come and help them. Now, click on the text of that and see the article. And, you know, you'll see, let's see here. Well, anyway, in the article, I'm going to read from the text as well. The development of NEOM has also resulted in local tribes being forcibly removed from the area so they can build the city there. The ambitious metropolis is being built by thousands of workers who are reportedly being housed in cramped conditions with six people sharing a tiny room when sleeping. And that when sleeping is, you know, big deal. And so in typical form for Mohammed bin Salman, for the Saudi government in particular, they've hired Indian and Asian workers who are very poor and brought them into the country and, you know, to pay them this money to send back to their families or whatever. And the Saudis are slow in paying. But once they've got these workers there, they have to stay there and work just to eat. And so in essence, brought them in as slaves to build these cities and the other projects that MBS is, you know, initiating in the country, in the kingdom. It is so sad. I remember seeing my partner in a business I had in Australia. We were dealing in Asia, and one of the kings there, I'm just trying to remember, on an island, had us come and build some, you know, foam-clad, sand-clad pillars and stuff for his new golf course. Well, my partner saw the Indian workers that he brought in, and they were poor. And they were using drills and various other electric tools to do the construction for this golf course. The way they powered their drills was there was a little kind of table stretched out like a narrow picnic table, and there were stations to charge or to plug your drill into. The way you plugged it in was to wrap bare wires from the drill around nails driven into this table that were activated with active, you know, power. And they would kill one or two guys every week who put the wrong wire in the wrong place there, you know, on these tables, and they would be electrocuted because they were barefoot and also the ground was wet. I mean, they had no respect for these guys. It was like, throw them on the pile, get another one. And this is what's happening in Saudi Arabia as well. Just, it's just sad.
So
really sad.
Who, he just wake up and think... All right, I'm going to build a city 17 times the size of London, which it says in the article there, and this is how it's going to be. I mean, okay, robotics, AI, obviously, are part of it. I don't even know what to say about that.
He wants the sand on the shores of NEOM to glow in the dark, right? And they're going to have robot martial arts, and they're going to have dinosaur robots, you know, roving around. I mean, this is a height of excess, you know, while people are starving and dying of thirst all over the world. Majority of the world is in drought. And he's saying, okay, for those of us who got the money, lots of money, let's have a fun park, you know, and have a fun day. And you got to ask the question, like you did, who thinks up this stuff? You
exactly.
know, I mean, they yeah. have different rules, a different community or something.
I'm telling you, $500 billion. I don't even know what to do with this except to say, yeah, some people have too much money and too much time on their hands. That's just my opinion, but my goodness, think of what you can do to help people with that money. But no, let's do this.
Well, think about it. We're not Saudi Arabia, but I was sitting down last night watching, you know, some movie on Roku and having my evening meal. And I thought, how many people don't have enough food and water every day? And here I am sitting here being entertained.
Yep.
Got plenty of food, plenty of water, nice warm fireplace and a house and wife and family, and not worrying about somebody knocking my door down. Well, not yet anyway, but at the moment, not. And And, you know, to the peasants and stuff in Africa and India, we live like kings. And to us, the MBS people with the Neom type city, they live like kings. I mean, there's degrees of this stuff. So point to finger at us too. So,
well, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think this country, many people in this country know what poverty is. Now, I know that a lot of listeners and viewers look at hard times and can't pay the rent. But I mean, pure, abject, no food, no water kind of stuff. And maybe even some of you have been in that position. I get that. But at a wholesale level of populations like this, wow, it's mind-blowing. It really is.
How much time we got left this evening?
We've got about 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left.
All right, I better speed up my game here. Let's see what's important. Let's look at slides 43 through 45 about dragons. You know, Quetzalcoatl, you know, in the Mayan Aztec legends, was a serpent, snake-like god man that came down and taught them how to build pyramids and technology and how to do calendars and celestial event tracking. And then if you look at slide 44 in the Ljubljana dragon in Slovenia, it says Slovenia, but it's Slovenia. The dragon is in Europe. The dragon is in Central and South America. The dragon is in China. You know, the Arthurian legends, of course, have it. And all over the planet, there are dragons, including, of course, in the Bible, Jewish and Christian Bible. The red dragon is Satan, the bad guy. But yet, many of these cultures worship the dragon being that they have in their legend as a good guy. And if you look at slide 45 under the Chinese dragon there, it takes you to a list in Wikipedia, the list of dragons in various countries. There's Anatolia, Arabian, Armenian, Chinese, Babylonian, Indian, Indonesian, Japanese, Khmer Rouge, Khmer, Korea, the Levant, you know, the eastern shore of the Mediterranean, Persia, Philippines, Taiwan, Samaria, Tibet, Turkic, Vietnamese. These are just, you know, the Asian dragons. And if you scroll down the page, you'll see that it lists the European dragons in Albania and all this stuff. And of course, the Arthurian legends of all that and the German legends of it. That list is long. And then you get North America. We had dragons in our lore, in the American Indians, in Africa, in South America. And even in Oceania. So why did all these cultures have this godlike serpent dragon in their lore? I mean, if it wasn't Satan himself and the fallen ones, you know, playing that role in these cultures. I mean, it's why did they all spring up? They weren't connected in the old days. The continents and the islands and stuff were separated. There was no traffic between them to share this culture with. How many of those also have the flood legend as well before, you know, break up of Pangaea and the great flood of Noah?
Yeah.
So it's just something that struck me the other day. I wanted to share that with folks.
It's very interesting when you think of that lore, the disparate locations and time. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, slides 40 through 42 are about the same article about the UNESCO attempts to put Saudi Arabian historical, you know, archaeological finds on the map and protect them. It's back to Saudi Arabia again because it's the last great unexplored frontier of the non-frozen parts of the planet. And they're finding things that take us back to the potential for this being the mythical Atlantis. I'm dealing with the people at Genesis Apologetics after they finish this next production. We're going to be looking at doing a production on my work on the Garden of Eden and the cause of the flood. So, you know, I encourage everyone else that's doing Christian outreach of some sort to ramp it up, do what you can, you know, get it out there, the gospel, because our time here is short. And, you know, although I'd like to be with the Lord now, I know that we've got work to do on the front line, so we can't give up. We got to keep looking for ways to witness and save as many souls as possible, or at least let Jesus do it.
Amen. Folks, it's so good to have Stan Dale back. Stan and Holly Dale. Please visit their website, standale.com. And also on the website, if you scroll down underneath the image of Atlantis, you'll find a way to sign up for Patreon for Stan and Holly Dale. Please do that. Support their work. Stan, thank you so very much. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Appreciate your flexibility as well. May God bless you. Folks, that'll do it for me. Have a great night.